Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Around the World in 70 Days on CGMQ 88.9 FM, where I discuss important current events and their relationship to our local community. I'm your host, Rhiannon, and today I've selected several pieces of news, and I'll be discussing their connection and importance to the Eastern Townships. Let's get right into it. Today, I'm going to be talking about a piece of international news that has very important connections to Canada. Between March 28th and April 1st, Inuit, Métis, and First Nations delegates met Pope Francis. According to CBC News, Nathan Obed, the president for the Inuit Tapit Kanatami, a nonprofit organization that represents Inuit across Canada, headed into meetings with the Pope at the Vatican with one thing in mind: to get an apology for the church's role in residential schools in order to help survivors endure the burdens of the past. More than 30 members of First Nation, Inuit, and Métis delegations are meeting with the Pope, with Métis delegates first on Monday, then a separate meeting with Inuit, and then First Nations on Thursday. At these meetings, there was a mental health support worker present and a translator. Hoping for a formal apology for the Catholic Church's role in running residential schools for when the Pope visits Canada at a later date. According to the president of the Métis National Council, Cassidy Caron, a papal apology is the number one priority for the Métis delegation, but in order for it to count, it needs to happen on Canadian soil. She said, and I quote, "I don't think it will be enough for the Pope to just apologize in private. I myself am not a direct survivor of residential schools, and that apology is owed to our survivors and to their families, and not just a few individuals who are able to and fortunate and privileged to travel over to the Vatican." Caron, the leader of the Métis delegation, has been meeting weekly with Métis delegates in preparation for the trip. She also traveled across the country to visit residential school survivors and community members before the trip. She said, and I quote, "We saw this as an opportunity to go over and share the stories of the Métis Nation, for him to truly understand the similarities, but also the unique experiences of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit." Caron said she also plans to urge the Pope to release community records related to residential schools. She said, and I quote, "That's how we'll fully understand what was taking place. What is that history? What are those experiences of our people? We're advocating for more than residential school records. We're advocating for the archives of the communities that these churches were in." She said ahead of the meeting that she would push for unfettered access to church and residential school records with the Pope and other church officials the delegation plans to meet this week, including Roman Catholic cardinals. She said that putting names to the children is incredibly important in the healing journey of the people. She said that they will be advocating for that to Pope Francis, as well as many other church officials, who they will be meeting throughout the week. Also there, the regional chief Gerald Antoine of the Northwest Territories, who is a residential school survivor, said there are several things the Pope could do to make amends. He said the Assembly of First Nations plans to call on the Pope to return church properties on traditional Indigenous lands back to Indigenous peoples, as well as to offer long-term financial support for survivors and to replace the Doctrine of Discovery, a 1493 papal decree used to justify Christian European explorers' claims to lands and waterways they allegedly discovered, with a one that represents and respects Indigenous peoples and cultures. Obed, the president of Inuit Tapit Kanatami, also wants the church to hold to account an oblate priest, Johan Rivoire specifically, who continues to live free despite multiple allegations of sexual abuse linked to his time in Nunavut. The president said in a recent interview that he is still alive and has not faced legal prosecution. He was in Canada from the early 1960s to 1993, when then he returned to France. A warrant was issued for his arrest in 1998, and he faced at least three charges of sexual abuse. More than two decades later, the charges were stayed. At the time, it was partly due to France's reluctance to extradite. The president said that we want to hear from the church and the Pope directly their commitment to holding to account anyone associated with the church that has committed crimes, especially against children. He believes Pope Francis can play a personal role in bringing about justice. He said, and I quote, "If he would take the time to tell Father Rival to go to Canada, then perhaps that would be successful in a way that no other body could. He has a unique place at this point in time to help Inuit, and I hope that he chooses to do so." So, why is a papal apology important? An official apology could recognize the suffering after being silenced for hundreds of years, and would mean that the church is finally taking responsibility for the loss of culture, language, families, and lives. This apology could also be the beginnings of other acts by the Pope, such as possible release of records for more transparency on the church's point, as well as returning of property, of land, and giving financial support. However, other survivals are critical of an apology. Charles Esau, a Cree residential school survivor, said, "Over 150 years of historical trauma experiences will not be wiped out with a few apologetic words." In fact, it's been 6 years since the Truth and Reconciliation Commission called for the Pope to apologize to survivors and their families. This call for an apology recently resurfaced when unmarked graves were found at former residential school sites. Although the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops has apologized, the Pope has yet to. And in 2017, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called for an apology from the Pope to no avail. These meetings, as such, set the stage for the Pope's trip to Canada coming up. I recognize that these reports can be hard to listen to. As such, there is support for those who are triggered by these reports. There's a National Indian Residential School Crisis Line at 1-866-925-4419. Now let's get into some national news. Today I'll be talking about an interesting development in Canadian politics that you may want to know about. On March 22nd, the Liberals and NDP reached an agreement called Delivering for Canadians Now, a Supply and Confidence Agreement. According to a release from the Prime Minister's office, the Liberal Party of Canada and Canada's new Democratic Party agreed to improve the approach to politics over the next 3 years for the benefit of Canadians. The parties have identified key policy areas where there's a desire for a similar medium-term outcome. This work will be focused on growing the economy by creating green jobs, making people's lives more affordable with housing and childcare, expanding and protecting healthcare. As the basis for this work, the agreement highlighted advancing reconciliation with Indigenous peoples as well. Both parties hope that by approaching Parliament more collaboratively, they'll be able to deliver on these shared policy objectives before the next election. The Office of the Prime Minister highlighted that, quote, "This agreement is not about compromising either party's core beliefs or denying their differences. It's about ensuring those differences don't stand in the way of delivering on shared goals for the benefit of each and every Canadian. Therefore, the parties agree to Delivering for Canada's Now, a Supply and Confidence Agreement from March 22nd, until when Parliament rises in June of 2025, in order to achieve the following 7 items. Making a better healthcare system, making life more affordable for people, taking the climate crisis and creating good-paying jobs, making better deals for workers, reconciliation, creating a fairer tax system, and making democracy work for people. As such, the following are specific details in how they will be achieving these goals. The first goal, creating a better healthcare system, will be achieved through launching a new dental care program for low-income Canadians, as well as continuing progress towards a universal national pharmacare program by passing a Canada Pharmacare Act by the end of 2023, as well as recognizing that health systems have been stretched because of COVID and working with provinces and territories to determine how they can deliver better health outcomes for Canadians, including more primary care doctors and nurses, mental health support, aging at home support, and better data. And lastly, tabling a safe long-term care act to ensure that seniors are guaranteed the care they deserve, no matter where they live. The second key objective was making life more affordable for people. In order to do this, the plan includes extending the Rapid Housing Initiative for an additional year, refocusing the Rental Construction Financing Initiative on affordable units, moving forward on launching a Housing Accelerator Fund, implementing a Home Buyer's Bill of Rights, and tackling the financialization of the housing market by the end of 2023. As well as including a $500 one-time top-up to Canada Housing Benefit in 2022. And finally, through introducing an Early Learning and Child Care Act by the end of 2022, ensuring that child care agreements have long-term protected funding that prioritizes nonprofit and public spaces. The third goal is tackling the climate crisis and creating good-paying jobs. In order to do this, they outlined advancing measures to achieve significant emissions reductions by 2030 compared to 2005 levels, as well as moving forward in 2022 on the creation of the Clean Jobs Training Center to support workers' retention, redeployment, and training, as well as moving forward with just transition legislation, guided by the feedback they receive from workers, unions, Indigenous peoples, communities, and provinces and territories. As well, they outlined developing a plan to phase out public financing of the fossil fuel sector, including from Crown corporations, including early moves in 2022. And finally, moving forward in 2022 on home energy efficiency programs that enhance energy affordability and reduce emissions, with investments to support multiple streams, including low-income and multi-unit residential apartments. The fourth goal was making a better deal for workers. In order to do this, they outlined ensuring that the 10 days of paid sick leave for all federally regulated workers starts as soon as possible, as well as introducing legislation by the end of 2023 to prohibit the use of replacement workers when a union employer in a federally regulated industry has locked out employees or is in a strike. The fifth goal of reconciliation is outlined with making a significant additional investment in Indigenous housing in 2022. Accelerating the implementation of the federal pathway to address missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and 2SLGBTQQIA+ people with Indigenous partners, as well as creating a standing federal provincial territorial table on missing and murdered Indigenous women to facilitate and coordinate this work, and providing the necessary support for First Nations, Inuit, and Métis communities who wish to continue to undertake the work of burial searches at former sites of residential schools. The sixth goal was making a fair tax system, and this was outlined with moving forward in the near term on tax changes on financial institutions who have made strong profits during the pandemic, and implementing a publicly accessible beneficial ownership registry by the end of 2023. The last goal is making democracy work for people. This was outlined through recognizing shared commitment to maintaining the health of democracy and the need to remove barriers to voting and participation. To do this, they outlined expanding election day of 3 days of voting, allowing people to vote at any polling place within their electoral district, improving the process of mail-in ballots to ensure that voters who choose this method are not disenfranchised, and committing to ensuring that Quebec's number of seats in the House of Commons remains consistent. So now that we've gone over an overview of this agreement, let's go over what this actually means, several questions you might have, and what this means for Canadians. Firstly, this isn't going to be a coalition government. The NDP can back out of the agreement at any point, and the deal only requires the NDP to vote in support of the government on confidence votes and budgetary matters, such as budget implementation legislation and money bills. The PMO statement says that in order to make the deal work, the NDP has agreed not to move a vote of non-confidence in government or to vote in favor of one should it be introduced by another party. They also promised each other further communication with staff members tasked with providing information in a timely manner so both parties are aware of announcements before they're actually announced. So, I'll leave you with a few things to think about. Do you think that this agreement will last the 3 years it's perceived to stay? Do you think that this will bring about consistent change and fast action, or not at all? And that's all I have for you today. I encourage you to look at these pieces of international and national news with a local lens. What do you think should happen with the papal apology, or lack thereof, and how do you think this may affect our community? And what are your thoughts on the new agreement between the Liberals and the NDP? Do you foresee change or similar actions by the government just under a different name? Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Rhiannon with CJMQ 88.9 FM, and I'll talk with you next week.